sound familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
Breastfeeding, bed sharing, and sleep training are some of the hottest topics out there today in the parenting world. We might be crazy, but we've decided to tackle them all in today's episode. I'm thrilled to welcome a new expert to the show, Dr. Wendy Middlemiss, an associate professor in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of North Texas. Today we are discussing the science of mother-infant sleep, breastfeeding, bed sharing, and sleep training. This is The Boob Group, episode 78.
Breast milk, it does a baby good.
Silly daddy, boobs are for babies.
I make milk. What's your superpower?
If my breastfeeding offends you, put a blanket over your head.
Dairy diva.
Don't be lactose intolerant.
Nursing nature's own breast enhancement.
Meals on heels.
Whoever said there's no use crying over spilled milk never had to pump.
Breast milk. All udders are inferior.
Whatever your point of view, we're here to support your breastfeeding goals. We're the Boob Group, because mothers know breast. Welcome to The Boob Group, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. The Boob Group is your weekly online on-the-go support group for all things related to breastfeeding. I'm your host, Robin Kaplan. I'm also an International Board Certified Lactation Consultant and owner of the San Diego Breastfeeding Center. Did you know that all of our episodes are now free? Yes, we opened up our archives just for you so that our listeners have access to all of our episodes anytime, anywhere. Just download them from our website, theboobgroup.com. Our apps, which are available on iTunes and Amazon Marketplace, or subscribe to our podcast through iTunes and have our episodes automatically added to your account each week. Today, I am joined by three lovely panelists in the studio. Ladies, will you please introduce yourselves?
My name's Christina. I'm 28 years old. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have a son, Gregory, that's 9 months.
I'm Stacey Spensley. I'm 31 years old. I'm a health coach, and I have one son who is 8 months old named Ivor.
I am also Christina Williams. I'm 34. I'm in medical education. I have one daughter. She's 21 months.
And I'd also like to introduce MJ, our producer. MJ, will you introduce yourself and tell everyone about our virtual panelists?
Yes. Well, I'm MJ. I'm stay-at-home mom to Jason, who's 27 months old. And thanks to Robin, I have this amazing opportunity to help and support other mamas through their breastfeeding journey. I'm super passionate about breastfeeding and helping others, so I'm really thankful to be here with you all. One of my duties as the producer is to bring you mamas into the studio, as well as over the internet. Our virtual panelist program is a way for anyone to give their opinions and share experiences, even if they can't be in the studio. So make sure you like our Facebook page and or follow us on Twitter using the hashtag BoobGroupVP, because on recording day, we post the same questions we ask our in-studio panelists, so you can join the conversation. And we can may even read your comment in the episode, or when you join the conversation, you may win a one-month subscription to the Boob Group Club. So come and share your stories while you're helping other mamas in the process.
Awesome. Thanks, MJ.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
Hey everyone, this is Sunny. I'm one of the producers on The Boob Group. And before we get started with today's show, we have a special interview for you. Dawn Alva is joining us. She is the founder of Rumina, which creates some wonderful products for breastfeeding moms. So Dawn, welcome to The Boob Group. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us what Rumina is.
Well, I'm the founder of Rumina Nursing Wear, and we design garments that transition from bump into your baby, designed for pumping and hands-free pumping and nursing.
Okay.
So we have tanks and also bras, so that helps when you're on the go and need to either nurse and or hands-free pump. It makes it easy, convenient, and saves time.
So I'm assuming you're passionate about your product, you're passionate about your company. Tell us how it got started.
So I struggled with breastfeeding and pumping with my son 6 years ago. And so when I was out in the market looking for something that I could actually do something else with my hands than hold these lovely funnels to my breast, nothing worked for me. My body type just didn't quite fit the structure of the garments that were out there. I wanted something that I could wear at work. It was very uncomfortable to get undressed at work, even though I had my lovely private room. I wanted something that was covering and layering. So I worked through different processes of putting my idea to paper. So I designed a seamless hands-free pumping and nursing bra, so no irritation with the nipples, and be able to easily, quickly nurse and pump wherever you're at.
So Dawn, tell us a little bit more about the products that you've created that you really like.
So we just came out with a bra that is what we call our relaxed crossover bra. So it has a beautiful design that layers under and has this V around your lovely breasts. But it's hands-free and designed for maternity as well as the new postpartum when you're engorged and sensitive. So it has a soft jersey knit cotton. It's seamless for no irritation, no holes. And it also transitions into hands-free pumping. So I still am nursing my one-year-old lovely little Beth, and I really love being able to not have to fuddle with any clips or clasp, and I prefer a little bit of support when I'm sleeping, and so I can easily just drop it down, no worries, no fuss, in the middle of the night, and get back into bed as quickly as possible.
I know, because, you know, I've done that too with, like, you were talking about the clips and stuff, and it feels like sometimes you're spending so much time just, you know, trying to set it up so that you can be hands-free, and I'm like, I probably wasted so much time just setting this up as opposed to
absolutely
just holding it.
I love when our moms give us feedback of when they're in the NICU and they need be some support and for the time, as well as going to transition into work, because juggling family, work, and newborn, it's obviously very, very challenging. So having something that can save you time, quick and easy, and makes you feel comfortable is what I was going for. A very functional garment.
So how can people purchase these garments?
Well, definitely come to ruminaformoms.com. We have some fun colors coming out over the course of the month. So it's not just your traditional bra colors, which we've been there for our tanks and our bras thus far. So you're going to see some glorious blues and vibrant reds. And I'm excited about that. So you can go to our website. You can also go to Amazon. And we also sell through different boutiques across the country.
Okay. Well, we're going to encourage our listeners to go to your website, because Rumina for Moms, if you go over there and you enter promo code MOMMYMEDIA, you're going to receive 20% off your entire purchase. So, Dawn, thank you so much for being here and for offering this great promo code for our listeners and promoting breastfeeding, because sometimes it's a challenge. And we love that there's products out there like yours that make it just a little bit easier.
Thank you very much, Sunny.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today's topic on The Boob Group is the science of mother-infant sleep, bed sharing, breastfeeding, and sleep training. Our expert, Dr. Wendy Middlemiss, is an associate professor in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of North Texas. She is also the co-editor of a brand new book called The Science of Mother-Infant Sleep, Current Findings on Bed Sharing, Breastfeeding, Sleep Training, and Normal Infant Sleep. Hi, Wendy, and welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you.
So, Wendy, what is the most most current research saying about the safety of bed sharing, and how does this affect SIDS risks?
Well, the safety of bed sharing is a topic that gains a lot of research and a lot of attention. And one of the most salient things to take out of all of the research as a whole is that there are specific things that create risks for babies in any sleep setting. And so for safe sleep, really what you need to do is to protect an infant's capacity to breathe, which means you have to keep their airway open, which means you have to protect their mouth and their nose and make sure that their neck isn't bent. And the other is that you need to protect their arousal response. When we sleep, we have an arousal response that wakes us if anything goes wrong. And in babies, that can be compromised. If they are preterm babies, if they aren't feeling well, if their mother smokes cigarettes during pregnancy or after. And so really the research as a whole, when you tease apart all the pieces, points to some very constant and salient risks for infants. They aren't necessarily tied to location. They are tied to what the infant needs to do to be healthy and while sleeping.
And what criteria should a parent follow if they want to make bed sharing safe?
Well, if they want to make bed sharing safe, then they have to make sure that they are doing everything that is going to lead to protect those two elements of the infant sleep. So to protect the airway, they need to make sure that the baby isn't sleeping anywhere where there's going to be something that will fall on the baby's face, whether it's bedding, whether it's a pillow, whether they're rolling onto a pillow, whether they're rolling up next to something that will impinge their breathing. That's very important. They should make sure that when the baby is sleeping that they aren't sleeping on a pillow. Babies come with their brain is such that it creates its own pillow. And if you put a pillow under a baby's head, it's like an adult trying to sleep on two pillows with our chin going down. So that's a problem. If moms are smoking, bed sharing really isn't a safe alternative. Babies' arousal response is fairly physiologically not as strong as when babies are not exposed to sleep. So if they want to share sleep spaces, they should make sure to protect that space for the infant. It's the same type of recommendations that you would have if you were placing a baby in a crib. The baby needs to be in a position where they're not going to, where there isn't soft things that are going to keep them from breathing well, and that they're going to arouse. See, one of the things, you don't want them to be overly hot. So blankets and covers are always a problem as well. In a bed with an adult, there are sheets and such. You need to make sure that they aren't going to be tangled. But those are the same types of concerns and steps you would take for a baby sleeping in a crib.
Okay. And how does bed sharing facilitate longer breastfeeding duration?
Well, it facilitates breastfeeding duration because it makes it very simple to breastfeed. The baby, a baby who's breastfeeding is likely to feed more often. With the mom there and the baby there together, that breastfeeding is just very simple. Putting the baby to bed very often when you're breastfeeding, putting the baby to bed, you breastfeed and the baby falls asleep. And so there isn't very often the recommendations that come with separate sleep create a necessary space between feeding and the infant sleeping, and that can be a problem as well in regard to that long-term breastfeeding.
Okay, and so I'd love to open this up to our panelists now. Ladies, if you bed share, do you bed share all night or just certain times of the night? Christina?
We bed share. My son goes to bed about 6:30, 7, and he'll go in his crib until we go to bed at about 8, 9 now these days. and then he'll sleep with us for the rest of the night. And he'll wake up about every hour in the crib, and we have to soothe him back to sleep. And then once we hit the bed, he's out for the rest of the night.
Okay. How about you, Stacy?
We do. When he was really little, we had a little kind of nest thing that went in the bed. And then now we do the same as Christina. We put him to sleep in the crib. He actually does pretty well in the crib. But then once he wakes up to eat, a lot of times it's hard to put him back in the crib after that. So he's been rolling a lot lately. He's just started crawling. So we try to put him back in the crib, but after a couple of tries, we'd rather sleep. And the more he sleeps, the more we sleep. So we'd rather he was just asleep than he was asleep in the crib.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone's nodding. Christina, how about you?
We are no longer bed sharing. We were until she was about 18 months old, in which case we transitioned her to the crib for the most of the night now. Still, sometimes she comes into our bed sometimes, but for the most part, she's in her crib.
Okay. And MJ, we have some virtual panelists who want to share what they're doing.
Yeah. A lot of the mamas are saying that they pretty much bed share all night long. One of the mamas said that she has, it's Karen Sanders, all night since birth, and she's 7 months now. She wouldn't get any sleep otherwise. And then another mama said, Stephanie Creed says, when we did bed share, we did it all night. It was quite convenient for nursing in the middle of the night and virtually no crying from our baby girl.
That's absolutely true. Wendy, does bed sharing make it more difficult for the breastfed baby to sleep longer chunks at night? Do you find that children tend to snack throughout the night when sleeping in bed with mom?
There is some indication that they will feed more often. That's not a problematic thing if a baby is sleeping and waking and feeding. It's often raised as though it's something to be troubled about, that it may impact later sleep and the duration of sleep, but there isn't really any research that suggests that that's the case. Certainly, there's no issue around feeding for the babies. They don't feed that way during the day. Generally, they feed when they're more occupied to do other things. And so there doesn't seem to be any definitive reason why that's a concern, but for many infants that will be the case. For many infants, though, they bed share and they wake every 2 hours or every 3 hours. So it will vary still from infant to infant.
Okay. Ladies, do your children breastfeed throughout the night?
Yeah.
Christina?
Yeah. Our Gregory does. He's constantly on the boob pretty much all night.
And are you getting sleep during this time?
Yes, a lot of it. when we go to bed, I mean, I will wake up maybe once or twice just to kind of flip over so he's on the other boob so I don't get engorged. But yeah, he munches all night.
Okay, how about you, Stacey?
He does. My husband works late, and so we're actually working on now to have him feed a little bit less frequently just because I tend to have to put him back down. And if I put him back down, he wants to nurse, whereas if my husband puts him back down, he'll actually go back to sleep. But he tends to, it's usually around 4 a.m., he's probably snacking pretty much constantly till 6 almost every morning.
How about you, Christina?
Not anymore.
Yeah.
About around 18 months also is when she stopped wanting to nurse in the middle of the night. She learned to take in a lot right before bed. I noticed that she would nurse for much, much longer and not wake to nurse. When we were co-sleeping, she would pretty much stay latched on all night. And if she came off, she would wake up. So that was a little bit tough, but I suffered through it for 18 months, and now she sleeps.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Wendy, Kay had posted on our Facebook page, what can I say to people who think that I'm ruining my child's chance of ever sleeping on his own or self-soothing while I'm bed sharing?
There isn't any research that suggests that babies who are engaged in shared sleep are going to have problematic sleep patterns later on. Infants take about the first 2 or 3 years to really settle into, sometimes around 18 months is what, is a common time for infant sleep patterns, almost irrespective of how they have been sleeping, whether parents had stayed present and put them down to sleep and then picked them up when they woke up, or whether parents were bed sharing with them, or whether they were settling in a separate location from the parent. But at about 18 months, between 18 months and 3 years, almost all infants, the majority of infants, will begin to sleep in a fairly set pattern. So really, in terms of ruining your infant's sleep, I don't think that there's any research that clearly supports that to be an issue. And when you kind of tease out some of the other elements, the the more comfort a child has, the more independent they become later. That has to do with attachment theory. It has to do with synchronicity. It has to do with many issues related to the neurology of that developing system of social and emotional interaction. So if someone were to say that to me, I would say, well, you know, that just doesn't seem to be the case. And it doesn't seem to be the case. It's just a handy thing, particularly if there's an expectation that infants should sleep through the night at a very early time. Then it's very easy to say that infants aren't sleeping well by 1 year or 1.5 years if they're in a shared sleep situation and they're waking more frequently. That may well be, and it probably is, how they will sleep at that time. But will they sleep that way later? That's not at all documented.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Well, when we come back, we will discuss with Wendy what current research is saying about sleep training and how that may impact breastfeeding rates. We'll be right back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the show. We are on the phone with Wendy Middlemiss, who is an associate professor in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of North Texas. And we are talking about her book, The Science of Mother-Infant Sleep, specifically bed sharing, breastfeeding, and sleep training. So, Wendy, let's talk about this sleep training trend. Parents are exhausted. Babies waking up multiple times a night. Everyone just wants a decent amount of sleep. So many parents consider meeting with a sleep coach or a sleep trainer. What is the most current research saying about sleep training, and is there a difference between sleep training and crying it out?
Well, to start with the last part of that question, sleep training incorporates crying it out, and there are many different levels of crying it out. Basically, when people talk about sleep training and they talk about controlled crying, they're talking about more controlled comforting. They are talking about trying to extend the period of time an infant is required to settle themselves before they receive attention. When you have controlled crying, the way sleep training had been very frequently thought of, it was to leave the baby, you know, to put the baby down if the baby's crying, to leave the baby there unless there were some physical reason that the baby was in danger, and then you would attend to the baby, but then you would put the baby back down. So if the baby threw up or had some other sort of distress that needed to be fixed, you would fix it, and the crying itself wouldn't be a reason to go back to the baby. That would be unmodified controlled crying. Modified controlled crying is when you put the baby down. If they're crying, you attend to them in longer periods of time in between. And then there is controlled comforting. Controlled comforting often entails instead of just going back to, you can go back and you can pat the baby, you know, rub the baby's back, or you can do some other sort of thing. You can go in and be present, and then it's that comforting rather than the crying that that you address. For all of them, if they are done correctly in terms of the actual behavioral modification steps that are required, then babies will stop crying. Because it's really just an extinction model where you're extinguishing the crying by not attending to it with any type of response or reinforcement. So the research is very clear, and you will see this often stated, that over a short period of time you can train, they don't use the word train, you can teach a baby to fall asleep on their own without crying, and that's because you've extinguished the crying behavior. The problem seems to be, at least during that time period, which is the only place that we have any research, and it's research that I had done in New Zealand, the time period when the baby is going through that extinction, their stress level remains very high. That means that they have stopped crying, but they are not feeling less distressed. The physiological signs of stress are still quite high. They don't change during that process. So the baby then is feeling this distress, but they are no longer communicating it because the communication itself, the crying, has been extinguished. The question is then, of course, whether that stress level remains, and we don't have any research that speaks to that as of yet. However, it seems a very risky approach to an end, and the end being everybody getting more sleep. Now, sleep, I'll be the first to say, is a very important part of caregiving. Having a baby that's rested, having parents that are rested, is always very beneficial. But getting to it by sleep training probably isn't the best approach. It really creates a situation that's very unnatural for the infant, that lack of response to their distress. Then there are ways to, if you take in that as a foundation, then as a family you can start to look at other ways you might be able to manage that nighttime care in a manner where everybody gets more sleep. But, not starting with the sleep training, but if you push that to the side and say, okay, I don't want to start there, and you look back and you, there are other ways that you can create a good sleep environment. Very often, one of the best ways, and I'm doing some research with a woman in Australia, one of the best ways is to really become extraordinarily aware of their sleep signals and what helps them to, what's most calming for them. And then that sometimes will facilitate that transition to sleep.
Okay. And I do want to mention, too, because we only have 30 minutes, we will be doing a whole nother episode on just all of these tips and tricks that Wendy has kind of outlined in her book as well. Ladies, have you ever tried sleep training? If you did, what happened? Stacey?
We haven't really tried it. We've kind of read a couple of the different techniques, and we're like, okay, is there any way we can get this kid to sleep a little bit longer? Again, my husband works late, so when he pops up, he goes to bed about 7:30, somewhere in there. And if he pops up at 8:30, 9:30, 10:30, I'm the only one who's there, and I have to pump again at night. So it's a little tough when, he's crying and I'm hooked up to my pump and in the other room and all that stuff. But everything, we've tried, sneaking in and kind of just patting, and he's not interested. So if I pick him up, I usually end up nursing him back down, which is fine. And I mentioned earlier, is now that when my husband is home on his nights off, then we'll have him try to go in and soothe him, and then I'm the last resort. And it's I don't know if it's helping him sleep longer, but it's helping me not have to go in every hour at least.
How about you, Christina?
It seems like Stacey and I are kind of on the same page. We did try crying it out, and I think I lasted 4 minutes and like 50 seconds. And I was in tears after about 30, 45 seconds, just knowing that I couldn't go and, help him. And after that, I swore it off and would never do it again. I mean, now I'm just like, he's eventually going to sleep through the night, and I'm not going to rush it.
Yeah. How about you, other Christina?
Sort of. So the situation we were in is that I had to go into surgery. And I knew I was going to be on some pretty heavy-duty pain medication for a few weeks and wouldn't feel comfortable bed-sharing with her. And so we went through a period where I stayed with her, but gradually, very ever so slightly, over a period of about 6 weeks, just moved slightly away from her. There was no tears. She felt me in the room with her and comforted by my presence, but without the big training, sort of formal process around it. And that I did after she night weaned herself, so she wasn't nursing overnight. And I kind of took those cues, and that's when I put off doing the surgery until I felt like she was in that place. And when I did that, breastfeeding was a really important part of it for me. I didn't want it to interrupt that relationship. And so what we did at that time was just sort of kept nursing and kept doing that, but just having her feel my presence with just a little bit more space. And she'd kind of look sometimes at me and then just go to sleep. And now she goes to bed without me in the room for too long. You know, I stay with her and comfort her and put her to sleep, but I don't have to stay in there for hours and hours, you know, like you see in sleep training situations.
Yeah. Okay. MJ, what about our virtual panelists?
We have Anne Linneberg Hamilton commenting about sleep training. She said that she did with her oldest. It worked, she said, but she regrets it. She's much more insecure than the one that they let sleep with them for 4 years. So
I thought
that was kind of interesting.
And I think, you know, my kids too are almost seven and eight, and sleep training was huge, like, at that point. And, you know, something recommended by the doctors. And it's interesting. I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed for days doing it. And I look back and I'm like, what was wrong with me? Why did I do that? but again, it's as we'll talk about in a little bit, the power of the healthcare provider can be, what is it, the white coat syndrome, can be very powerful as well. Wendy, how can sleep training affect, negatively affect breastfeeding if families are trying to keep breastfeeding going throughout the night, but then they might start weaning maybe a little bit earlier, or how can it affect it?
Well, I think, you know, part of some of the things that the moms were mentioning is that it's very incompatible, breastfeeding and this idea of not being present, because part of any sleep training and part of any teaching the baby to settle by themselves means that you've removed people from that transition to sleep. So you could breastfeed right before putting them down, but then during the night you would be very hesitant to breastfeed them when they woke, because you really want them, you know, part of sleep training is to have them settle back to sleep as well. And so that really, it takes the mom out of easily having a place in that constructed sort of setting. And as the moms are saying, it doesn't feel natural. It feels very uncomfortable. And it is very easy to listen to, you know, the advice of somebody such as a medical professional, certainly. But for breastfeeding, it makes it a very difficult situation, because breastfeeding involves engaging in exactly what the controlled sleep is trying to end.
And Wendy, you mentioned in your book that parents often hear recommendations from healthcare providers regarding when a baby should be sleeping through the night or doesn't necessarily need to feed during the night anymore. So I would love to bust some of those myths by what are normal sleep patterns for children throughout the first 2 years, and when is it quote unquote normal for a child to stop feeding during the night?
Sometimes in between, you know, maybe around 2 years to stop feeding in the night. It depends upon whether they're still breastfeeding. It will decrease the breastfeeding and breastfeeding during the night to some extent when they begin to engage in eating solid food, because they will get more different sorts of nutrients from the solid food. For sleeping through the night, babies are going to be very fluctuating in their sleep patterns for the first 4 months. They will change fairly frequently for the next, you know, until they're a year to 18 months of age. But babies before 4 months of age are very likely to wake during the night. And they are as well from 6 to 8 months of age and to 12 months of age. And there are times where they will start to sleep, and then because of developmental issues, or whether those are cognitive or physically driven or socio-emotionally driven, there will be reasons that they will wake more often again. So it's very flexible. You can almost count on that until 18 months of age. And by 3, most babies will be settling through and sleeping through the night, not eating through the night. That sort of thing, and not eating through the night earlier than that. But these babies who are still waking at 18 months of age or still feeding during the night at 18 months of age, by the age of, slightly older than that, will not differ in how they sleep or eat in comparison to other babies.
Okay, so you're saying in the future, it's not like they're setting up bad patterns?
No, it really doesn't seem to be. Some of the most recent research, and I think we outline it in one of the chapters in the book, but there's a longitudinal study that's been done. It's beautiful in terms of the information that it provides. And when you look at that information, it shows that by 18 months of age, most babies are sleeping pretty much the same. By 3 years of age, significant majority of them are sleeping through the night, irrespective of how they began. The mom who said, we just kind of, figured they'd start sleeping soon. That really probably is the case for most infants.
Okay. And how do these recommendations from healthcare providers affect the parents' decision-making about sleep training and night weaning?
Well, the healthcare providers are most likely to follow AAP recommendations, and most of those recommendations are going to look toward definitions of sleep latency and number of times babies sleep at night to define healthy sleep. As well, you will have recommendations for solitary sleep. When you put all of that together, the messages that you get will be focused on the idea of having the infant sleep for long periods of time as early as you can. And developmentally, that's not the most crucial issue in these very early months. What's most crucial in these very early months is the responsiveness and the synchrony between the baby and the care provider. And that actually provides a firmer foundation for later, healthy development than will otherwise. But our medical community doesn't spend a lot of time teaching pediatricians about socio-emotional development, so it isn't really a place that they're going to start for an answer or a discussion.
Okay. Ladies, what did your pediatrician say about night waking and night feeding, and did this affect your decision with nighttime parenting? Christina?
Well, we have a doctor's appointment on Monday, so we'll see how that goes. But at 6 months, she, asked to see sleeping through the night. And at this point, we were bed sharing and didn't mention that. But she was like, he's old enough now where you can start thinking about sleep training if that's what you decide. And I just, okay, that's good. Glad that you said that. But we're just going to continue doing what we're doing. So we'll see how Monday it goes, though.
Okay. How about you, Stacey?
So our pediatrician's office has a little checklist that you fill out before you go in and see the doctor, and they kind of lead you to give the right answers. They're kind of red flags, but one of them is your baby sleeping through the night? And you're supposed to check yes. And he had previously, it's 5 to 6 hours or whatever. It's just at a six-month appointment, he had a really bad 4 month sleep regression and he hadn't been. So I checked no, but they didn't really say anything. So, it's like he gets as much sleep as he seems to need, and clearly I have a 22-pound 8-month-old, he's not starving, he's doing fine, he's very happy. So, I'm more worried about how he is than what the doctor says he should be.
Okay. How about you, Christina?
My doctor was always really supportive of, nursing through the night and was never concerned with her night wakings. She wasn't keen on bed sharing. I told her that's what we're going to do anyway, and end of discussion. but she was always very supportive of breastfeeding as often as possible.
Cool. MJ, any virtual panelists sharing any information?
Yeah. Priscilla Amy, I love her comment. Why would I ask my pediatrician permission to feed my baby? She says, that's nuts. I fed her when she was hungry. Duh. And then Amy Mowers, she says, she suggested we try and cut down on nighttime feedings so that we wouldn't create habits. I smiled and kept doing what worked for us, and that is listening to our babies and giving them what they need.
Sounds like we have a lot of intuitive parents. Yes. in the studio as well as online. Well, thank you so much, Wendy, and to our incredible panelists for discussing this very important topic that is pretty much on the minds of all parents of small children. And clearly, this is such an involved topic, so we plan on having Wendy back on the show to discuss ways to calm a crying baby and have a more peaceful night's sleep based on the research discussed in her book. So thank you so much, Wendy. We so appreciate your time.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. There were a lot of wonderful moms that have participated.
I know, aren't they great?
Yes, they are.
And for our Boob Group Club members, our conversation will continue after the end of the show as Wendy will discuss her top 5 tips for making decisions about nighttime care. For more information about our Boob Group Club, please visit our website at theboobgroup.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
So here's a comment from one of our listeners. This is from Maria, and this is what she wrote. Hi, Robin and company. I just wanted to let you know that I am a regular listener to your radio shows. I live and work here in the west of Ireland. I am sure you know what a great support you are to breastfeeding moms. I am still breastfeeding my soon-to-be 15-month-old little girl. I was hoping to breastfeed to about 12 weeks to give my baby the best possible start in life. From tuning in regularly to your show, I got a lot on information, inspiration, and motivation to keep on going, and I can't believe it's still working out. I have a bright, healthy, happy little girl who loves to breastfeed. Thanks so much for everything. That wraps up our show for today. We appreciate you listening to The Boob Group. Don't forget to check out our sister show Preggy Pals for expecting parents and our show Parent Savers for moms and dads with newborns, infants, and toddlers. Thanks for listening to The Boob Group, your judgment-free breastfeeding resource.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating health care problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified health care provider.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen. On sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.